So, hello, I'm Yoli. For those of you guys don't know me, I am going to be talking about the second of the 10 great precepts, which is the precept of non-stealing. But before we start, I thought I'd share a little bit about myself. And first of all, I'm a doctor and an educator, and I've never done this kind of talk, so I've been a little bit nervous. I was talking to Mick before this. And I was saying, yeah, I don't understand how people get so nervous and they wish they hadn't signed up for this. And I wish I hadn't signed up for this because it is a very different type of teaching. I'm used to teaching with PowerPoints. I'm used to teaching, sciencey medical stuff. So this is a little different. So I do want this to be interactive. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a Buddhist expert, so I am fine with interruptions and interactions. So please, if I say anything that sounds weird, please let me know. So anyhow, I have been at Brightway Zen for about 2 years now, and I live close by, so I'm usually in the dirt. I am visiting family, and then I'm heading to Orlando for a conference. This is why I'm in Florida. I started at Brightway Zen about 2 years ago, about the end of the precepts talk in 2023. So I caught only the tail end of it. And then last year, I caught the full study of it. And at the end of the precept study, I took Jukai. And taking Jukai was very important for me because it was when I felt that I could call myself a Buddhist. I didn't feel that I could call myself a Buddhist before then. I was studying Buddhism, but it felt very theoretical. So becoming a Buddhist was very important to me. And I found Brightway Zen very similarly to what other people have. I found Domio's podcast, and I found that it was close to my home, and I landed on Zen because I was in search of something. Now, I do have to admit that when I learned about the precepts, I had a very visceral reaction because it felt very religious-y to me, very Ten Commandments-y, and it made me a little bit skeptical and a little bit squeamish, I have to admit. And honestly, I thought I was doing a pretty good job already of being a good person. I never killed anybody. Although sometimes I wanted to, I didn't steal anything, though, anything major, though. I did steal river rocks from people's front yards to indulge my habit of rock painting. And I don't drink or smoke. And so I just thought, what is it with these precepts? But then I did slowly realize that they are a little bit different in that there's not a deity that punishes us for not following these precepts. And we follow them because we want to be better people and not because we are afraid of God's wrath or of going to hell. And as I was learning this, I learned that in Christianity, commandments are handed down by God who punishes or rewards. And if people falter, they ask for and they receive forgiveness. And I think it takes a lot of fortitude for us to follow these moral compasses with no obvious reward, right? We have to monitor ourselves and we have to ask ourselves for forgiveness, which I think can sometimes be a little bit more difficult than asking a God or somebody else for forgiveness. But anyways, that's how it feels to me, and that's how it is to me. And it was during the precept study that I recognized the endless nuances of these precepts and the impossibility of following them perfectly. And I remember Mark last year saying that it was impossible to follow the precepts, but because I hadn't gone through them and I didn't understand them, I didn't really get how difficult it was. And then I realized that striving to be better all the time is probably the point of it all. We can't settle for just being good enough. I feel like we have to always be better than we think we are. And that's hard, and it requires self-awareness, and it requires awareness of others and the world around us. So that's my little intro, and that's my sort of my view on it. So on to the non-stealing precept. So in preparing for this talk, I looked at several sources. One of them was the book Opening to Oneness by Nancy Mujo Baker, which is a book that we used last year for the precepts. And then I also used this book here, which is Being Upright. I don't know if you guys can see it. It looks a little fuzzy. And this is the book by Reb Anderson, which is actually wonderful. And again, I want this to be interactive, so please interrupt me. Everybody's muted, so hopefully I'll be able to hear you and I'll be paying attention. And then I want to do it sort of the way that we normally do. I'll talk, then we'll break out in groups, and then we'll meet at the end. So, you know, what is stealing? The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines stealing as to take or appropriate without right or leave and with intent to keep or make use of wrongly. It sounds very out there. It doesn't define the thing that's being stolen, which leaves that thing open to interpretation. And we, or me, I guess, normally think of stealing as it relates to physical objects like cars and jewelry, money, etc. But it can be applied to other things like, for instance, intellectual property. We also use the word steal to describe actions that may not be criminal in nature, like, you know, that purse I bought was a real steal, or I stole a kiss, or that person stole the attention from the speaker with all their outbursts. And, you know, these examples aren't necessarily harmful, though, you know, they can be, you know, especially the last one can be annoying if somebody's always stealing away attention. The everydayzen.org website lists the precept as not to steal, but to receive what is offered as a gift. Being satisfied with what I have, this is the practice of non-stealing. And I really think that really the sense of satisfaction or dissatisfaction, that can really apply to any precept and not necessarily the one for stealing. The idea that not being satisfied, this idea that not being satisfied can often motivate us to act in ways that are harmful to ourselves or to others. And stealing can be thought of as being motivated by greed, but it can also be motivated by emotions, resentments, and envy. The commentary on the Perfection of Wisdom says, Gaba Mati took a grain of rice to see if it was ripe. It could not be returned to the original place on the stalk. Because he committed this action, he was born as a cow for 500 generations. Later, he became an arhat, but still regurgitated food like a cow. I mean, so what does this mean, right? You know, and I, the way that I interpret it is that a tiny grain of rice is small and it could be meaningless, but stealing it has ramifications. You can't put it back. It could affect the stock. It could affect the way rice grows. I know nothing about how to grow rice. So, but I'm assuming that we are, you know, we're not in a vacuum, and anything we take and we can't put back does have ramifications. And according to the, and I'm gonna not say this right, Lalita Vistara Sutra, if you commit the five deadly sins, like killing your father, your mother, killing an arhat, shedding the blood of a Buddha, or creating a schism in the Sangha, you can still be saved. However, if you steal Sangha property, you cannot be saved. So they really, like, you know, this precept was a bit harsh, and they really believed in not stealing. I'm going to read a passage from the Being Upright, the bottom of page 108, if anybody's interested. It says, being upright and settling into the suchness of mind and objects, you take what is given and do not take what is not given. In uprightness, you can see that everything is you. If there is one thing about yourself that is obscure to you, that feels separate from you, then you will feel some dent in your wholeness. and that one small dent will force you inevitably to try to fill it. When you try to fill it, it will feel as if you are taking something without permission, that you are stealing. You will not understand that what you fill it with is a gift. The life of this precept comes forth from awareness of how your own life is born of and sustained by the kindness of all animate and inanimate beings throughout the universe, and how all beings are supported and sustained by your life. Aided by such awareness, you witness a free-flowing giving and receiving between self and others. You understand that everything you see and hear is yourself, and thus you forget your limited, independent self. At the same time, yourself is fulfilled and overjoyed. When you are fulfilled in this way, you no longer yearn for external objects, and the precept of not stealing is accomplished. For all those who wish to practice and realize this great Bodhisattva precept of not stealing, there is an authentic and unsurpassable path offered by the Buddha ancestors of the Zen tradition. It is simply to sit, stand, walk, and even recline with complete gentleness and uprightness in the midst of all other beings. Dogen translates it this way: the self and things of the world are just as they are. The gate of freedom is open. This precept is about being satisfied with what you have. And this means, I think, that it can be applied to really to any aspect of our lives. There's a story in the Being Upright book that goes like this. The Zen monk Ryokan, a fine poet, lived in a little hut on the mountainside overlooking the Sea of Japan. He had few possessions. One full moon night, a thief came to visit. Ryokan was not at home, so the thief entered, but he found nothing to steal. Ryokan returned and caught the thief and said, "I'm sorry that you came all this way and didn't get anything. Here, have my clothes." And he gave the thief his clothes. The thief was surprised, but he took the gift and stumbled off into the moonlight night. After he had left, Ryokan, standing naked in the moonlight, cried out, "Poor fellow, he didn't get much. I wish that I could give him this full moon too." I just love that. And I love the idea of him standing naked in front of the moon. So what the story says to me is that we tend to cling to things that are really unimportant. They may seem important, but they're not that important, but we just don't know it. But we can still find purpose without them. And it doesn't mean the end of our existence. It only means, it is only by letting go of these things and these attachments that we can know happiness, because sometimes things can get in the way of seeing. And this inherent dissatisfied nature of ours is not new, obviously. And it's been around for a long time. And this is why Buddha is who Buddha was. And so there is a poem from medieval China that gives us a taste of this. And I'll tell you why this poem was, you know, kind of sang to me. And it's called White Hair. So white hair, don't dye it. Don't pull it out. Let it grow all over your head. No medicine can stop the whiteness. The blackness won't last out the fall. Lay your head on a quiet pillow. Hear the cicadas, idly inclined to watch the waters flow. The reason we can't rise to this broader view of life is because, white hair, you grieve us so. So I love this. And this is looking at stealing from a slightly different perspective, which is that there's something being taken away from us, which is, in this case, it's our youth. And this poem speaks to me because I have white hair and I dye my hair, and I suffer because I have to dye my hair because I hate dyeing my hair. But I just have to accept the fact that I don't like white hair, and I will go on dyeing it until I'm ready not to go gray. But what do we sacrifice when we become dissatisfied with parts of ourselves? Because this is really a dissatisfaction that I have with my own gray hair. So what does that dissatisfaction take away from me? Because I am not happy with a part of my body that belongs to me. And I never thought about this precept as that, as having the dissatisfaction with even one part of ourselves, like our weight, our hair, our eye color. And that is truly stealing from ourselves when we don't like parts of ourselves. So to me, the point of this precept is not just about stealing physical objects, obviously, objects that don't belong to us, but it's really about much more. It's about stealing away time, dignity, attention, joy, awareness, you know, fill in the blank. It's about the harm we inflict on others and on ourselves. And it's about the perception that there is a harm inflicted on us, that something is also being taken away from us, which whether it's youth, physical ability, talent, a better job, and that those perception can cause us to act a certain way and not always a good way. So I'm going to share my story and it's a little hard. Some of you guys know my story and some of you don't, but I wanted to share, and I think it's important because Buddhism really has changed my life. And this precept has impacted my challenges. I want to share my challenges and how it has helped turn my pain into something that I can actually live with. So Buddhism has provided me with a lot of answers for the most part, but it hasn't been easy. I've had some worsening personal struggles. And after studying this all this time, it was hard for me to see how Buddhism was useful in my particular situation. I thought that becoming a Buddhist automatically meant I felt no pain and that my life would be perfect. And I learned that that's not the case. I became a bit despondent, and I started the guided student practice with Domio, and she posed a question to us, and the question had to do with dukkha, and what was causing us dukkha, and how we could do something about relieving the dukkha. And honestly, at the time, even after 2 years of practicing, almost 2 years of practice, I could not see how I was contributing to dukkha, because I felt that my dukkha was from my suffering was external, and I could not do anything about that. So how did I contribute to this? And I didn't see that. I can see how I was personally adding to my own misery, the misery that I was feeling from what was from external sources. And not seeing that made it impossible for me to change my outlook on my life and to rise, because I went into a very dark place and I couldn't see how I could lift myself out. And my daughter I've suffered rejection from my daughter over the years, and it has been very painful. And it's nothing that I don't know the answer to why she rejects me. She's never shared that with me, but the worst part of it is that she has not just rejected me, she's keeping my grandson from me. And that has been like one of the most painful experiences in my life, because I cannot see my grandson. And I don't know why I can't see my grandson. So I took a break from Buddhism because I couldn't see past it. I couldn't see my own pain. And actually I took away, my intention was to take a break from Buddhism, but I took a break from Brightway and I couldn't get away from Buddhism. But somehow in my misery, I found my answer. I found how I was contributing to my own misery. And that was pretty much an epiphany. It was like, yeah, of course, but I couldn't see it at the time. So how does this relate to the precept of non-stealing then? How does my own wallowing in misery, how does that relate? When I wallow in my own self-pity, I waste time on stupid, mindless things. I play games on my phone, I watch TV, I lay around, I feel sorry for myself. And that's time I will never get back, right? I am in this stupor. I'm wasting time. When I wake up out of my stupor, when something hits me and said, okay, I'm done with this, I get mad at myself because then I've wasted all of this time. I've taken time away from my limited existence to wallow in self-pity. And then I, of course, get mad at myself. I also struggle from chronic pain and fatigue, and at times I want to do nothing. So sometimes I lay down and take a nap, and then I get mad at myself for wasting time. I have vowed to be more mindful about my time and about not stealing precious moments from my life. And I also vow to forgive myself for the inactivity when I'm not feeling well. If I have to rest, I have to rest. And I want to be joyous and happy and appreciative and grateful when I'm live and I'm not in that deep place. But taking time and stealing time away from me doesn't just affect me. It affects people around me because we don't live in a vacuum. When I wallow in self-pity, phone calls remain unanswered. Emails don't get returned. I don't finish my clinic notes, which means that somebody who else who sees that patient doesn't know what my thought process was in treating my patients. I don't work around my property. I live in a co-housing community. If I don't work around my property, if I don't do the things I say I'm going to do, it affects my neighbors and my community. So there are ramifications to the times that I steal myself because I steal something away from those around me, even those people I can't see. We don't live in a vacuum. None of us does. So everything, if all of our actions have consequences. And so this precept is very meaningful to me because I have felt for so long that I am stealing time, this precious time that we have, away, and there's no way to get that back. So we're gonna go into breakout groups, and I would like to know, what have you recently stolen away from yourself? What have you stolen from others? And what are the consequences that you've experienced from stealing from yourself or from others? And then how does that make you feel? You don't have to share things like I do. I just think it's an important question. And when you think about these questions, think about the non-criminal stealing, the criminal stealing, that's very obvious. But the stealing that you do, either from yourself or from others, but the stealing that's done from you, like, because that's also really important when you feel that somebody is taking something away from you. That none of us feels good when that happens. And so I think that also has consequences with our behavior and our actions. So how does that sound? Yeah. So maybe 10 minutes, and then what time is it?
Is
You have lots of time.
11:30. I don't 35 minutes after the hour for me.
Okay. All right. So 10 minutes in breakout rooms, do you think? And then.
Sounds perfect. And then we'll come back together.
Okay. All right. So let the sharing begin. Does anybody feel like sharing their stories or sharing thoughts? Play.
There be seen.
Our group, our
Oh.
talk, when we were talking, oh, sorry, that cuts one off.
Well, I hate to being the first one to ask question every time, but I just waited and no, since nobody was ready yet.
Oh.
Well, thank you for sharing about this precept. I do have a question, and that question has been quite bothering me for quite a while, and I want to see what other Buddhists how to interpret that. So when you say when we say don't steal, the assumption is there's something that belongs to you. There's a concept of private property. How serious is Buddhists consider the concept of private property? Is that sacred? Do Buddhists own things at all? Can we can one person, if one person cannot steal from another, can the majority of the group vote to take something from one person and give to another person, or one member of the Sangha to give to another member of the Sangha? That basically is my question.
That's a good question. Don't we all?
Say, Yoli, you want some help with that one?
That too.
You know, it is kind of weird because, the other precepts like do not kill and do not indulge in anger and all of that just seem like, well, of course. And then stealing ends up seeming a little like, well, I mean, it seems kind of a little dependent on like cultural rules and traditions and, definitions of private property and all that. So it seems a little bit lame. And as somebody in our group pointed out, like, well, monks wouldn't have really had anything anyway.
Except for their clothes.
Yeah. They shouldn't be attached to, right? So I can't really answer the questions you were asking, Alan, about like, I don't know, because of di very different kinds of Buddhist communities. And I think even within a, even the monks have their own, like, you got your own razor and your own robe and your own bowl, mostly because it's a personal item and nobody else wants it. There most Buddhist communities haven't been like communal, let's share everything, nobody owns anything. That's not how most human societies have been. So I see this as like a, maybe even in an ideal sense, we could say, pshaw, there's nothing to be stolen. And yet, like, if I go out there and steal somebody's car, there's going to be consequences and they're going to be upset. Like, that is just the world that we live in. So it feels like it asking for us to be respectful of the world that we live in. Like, maybe if we live in a big commune where everything's shared, then we don't have to worry about this in as concrete a way. But that's not the world that we live in. So I guess it's like that nod toward like, well, what are the repercussions of taking this thing? I don't know. Does that help? All right, take it away.
Clay, did you want to say something? Your hand was up
Clay
earlier.
was next.
Thank you. Our group was talking about, and we got onto entitlement. And for me specifically, if when life's stressful, I don't have time for my son. I have a 6-year-old, and it's, oh, let's play this or let's do that right now. It's like, hold on, there's a fire right now. If you're not contributing to putting out the fire, then everything else can kind of wait and go on the back burner. And in my head, I'm saying, you know, when there isn't a fire and we can relax and sit down and take a load off, then I can be present and, you know, be there for him or whatnot. So there's our group kind of kept circling those similar thing. And it was, you know, I went back to the Bodhisattva vows of Dharma gates are boundless. Like you're always going to have a situation when you need to just be there. So you can meet the unexpected by not expecting anything in the moment. It was just neat kind of thinking of it from stealing the opportunity to grow. But that's all. Thank you.
Mick, I guess.
Yeah. Alan, I really enjoyed your question, and I've actually thought about that kind of thing a lot. And this was maybe two precept seasons ago, but I just thought, like, you know, I'm here, like, in my house. I live in an old house, and it's like the things that make up my house, the wood that is my house, these are like trees that 100 years ago were like nourished by sun and rain, and now I own them. Like, to me, that concept of like, I mean, I don't know what that means. And, you know, I think for me, the precepts are almost like, I guess, self-evident warning labels. I don't know if you've seen on bags of popcorn, but it says do not overcook on the popcorn. And it's like, is anybody out there thinking they should overcook it? Like, and so to me, I think that, like, I hope for all of us, like, not stealing stuff isn't something that's like a big revelation. But I think, you know, what's different than this, from this to like a thou shalt not steal, is like, you know, we have to make sense of this to ourselves. You know, we have to understand what this means. And for me, you know, I've got my own karmic package and my associations with, you know, I need this and I should have this. And I think for me, this almost like constant revisiting of like, am I taking this? You know, that commitment to moving into every moment with that idea of like, is this something that I'm stealing? Is this really mine? I don't know. For me, that's the way I like to think about it.
Thank you. I can't see anybody. Is anybody in the dirt sitting up there?
Nope.
All right. So I guess Kenwick?
Hi, thank you. So one of the things that I think about is generosity and how you can both steal it and have it stolen from you. You know, it's very easy to look at something that's freely given by someone and say, oh, they're giving it to me. You know, like I can take that, right? But you know, some people have problems where they're overly generous, or you know, sometimes you're the one that's overly generous. And maybe people take advantage of that. And that's something that I think about when we talk about stealing too. It's not conventional stealing because you do have somebody that's freely giving you something, but then you have to wonder, is this too much? Am I taking too much of a gift from someone? And I think that's something that we have to be careful about because I feel like, you know, there are some level of consequence when you do that, when you do take advantage, even if it's inadvertent. So I try to be mindful in my interactions with people, and I'm working on kind of getting to the point where I don't allow people to take advantage. That's something that I've struggled with. I tend to be the person that's like really giving of my time, really giving of, you know, money, things, whatever it is. But you're hurting yourself when you do that, to too much of an extent, right? Like, so you kind of have to find this balance between being there for people, giving them what they need, giving them time, and not letting that be stolen from you at the same time. So that's something that I think about is generosity and how that can be taken advantage of.
That's a great point. I actually was talking to my aunt about that earlier because she was sharing some similar story of a family member that was constantly taking advantage of her, asking her for rides here, far away, like going really far places, but not giving anything in return. Not that my aunt asked anything, but in this particular case, she was helping her plan a party that she was not invited to. And so that's a big deal. And she finally just had to, protect herself and cut her off. So thank you. For anybody else? Brian?
Good. Tyler won't speak, so I will. We were talking about situations like in a group discussion where someone is saying something, sharing, and how we always try to be careful not to interrupt and take away from their sharing because we'd be stealing maybe their thoughts, but how at the same time, we are excited to add and to reaffirm what they're saying. It's like a balance between, hey, I agree with you, and then you start going, and next thing you know, the person has not really finished their whole train of thought and never got to share it, so we stole it from them, but it was not our intention. So.
Thank you. That's so excellent. Thank you. Jen, are you?
Yeah, I know we're at the end, but I just wanted to say that our group also talked about in the way of stealing from yourself. It sort of reminded me of what was just said about generosity when you're able to be generous with someone else, but you forget to be generous to yourself and to take care of yourself, and that. You're counting on yourself to look out for you and to love, to give permission to have joy and to keep living and believing in yourself. And sometimes that we've realized we steal that from ourselves because we're trying to give everything we have to others. And I was just going to agree that yeah, we do have to balance that so that we're not stealing our own I don't know what it is that we're stealing, but we need to be there for ourselves too.
Thank you. Let's see. That's very cute. Thank you. I think it's time, right? Is it? All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening and for giving me part of you today, which I will gladly take away. So we offer the merit of this precept talk to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas,
Not
Mahasattvas,
with
wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha
Raj.
Prajna
Raj.
Karma.
Thank you, Yoli.
Thank you,
Thanks,
everybody.
Yoli.
Have a good night.